Won't we just do a little chat about what we've been talking about for the past now 7 weeks? So we've been talking about questions you need answers to. And we said that everyone has a worldview. That's how we started, right? Everyone has a worldview. In fact, your worldview is what leads you to believe or to agree or disagree on certain topics, to where to vote and how to vote, where to go and not to go. It all has to do with your worldview. What did we say a worldview was? Worldview. Anyone?
It's the comprehensive system we use to shape how we see the world. We live our lives based on our own perception of how the world should work. Our worldview shapes our opinions, morals, and values about all the issues of the world and plays a central role.
Yeah. But tonight we're going to try without notes, right? It doesn't have to be perfect, right? Because you have notes. What I want to know is, do you have a concept of what we've been talking about, right? So, in short, the worldview is the lens through which we look at the world and make decisions about our daily life, right? That's what a worldview is. The lens through which you look at the world and how you make decisions, in your daily lives. How is a worldview formed? Mm-hmm. Yeah, a worldview is formed by answering by having what?
A coherent
answer to these four questions. Anyone can tell me what are these four questions we need answers to?
So we got to know what we have to know what our destiny is.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Origin.
What our origin is.
Okay. Okay, but if we start at the beginning, it'll be what?
Where?
Origin, right? Who am I?
Meaning.
Meaning,
Morality.
Mm-hmm. Destiny. So origin has to do with who am I? How did I get here? What makes me human? Who am I? How did I get here? What makes me human? Meaning, do I have purpose? Do I have purpose? Do I have value? What is my purpose in this life, right? Morality, it's by what criteria do I decide something is right or wrong? And origin is, does life end at the grave?
Destiny.
Isn't that what I said?
Origin.
Oh, yeah, destiny. Does life end at the grave? Does life ends at the grave, right? And we talked about different worldviews, but we said but if you categorize them, they literally really fall into two different views, right? Whether you're an atheist or agnostic, a theist. Can you share some other ones with me? Agnostic, theist, atheist, deist. So any one of these and more, it's still categorized by two. So the agnostic and the deist believe that God, the theist believe that God created the entire world, and God is in and outside of the world. And he's involved. That's why the Bible says, in him we move and breathe and have our being. He's involved in the affairs of men. The deists believe that there is a God, but after he created the world, he became an absentee father and said, hey, I set the laws and everything, so you take care of yourself. You deal with this yourself, right? And as I said, as a kid, even in church, I used to hear people singing the Beth Midler song, God is watching us from a distance. It wasn't until I was a little older, I'm thinking about the song, and I'm like, how in the world were people singing this in church? Because what he's saying is that God doesn't care, you know? So God is a distant father. She's almost talking like a deist. Agnostic said, well, I don't necessarily, I don't know. I know there is something here, but I can't explain it. I can't even begin to understand it, so I'm not even going to go in it. So, whatever, right? So we have the other side, which is the atheists who believe that there is no God.
And right now, do they call themselves naturalists?
Naturalists, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Naturalists. So whenever you hear somebody talking naturalists, it's somebody who supposedly heavily involved into science. So they're telling you everything is natural. Everything they believe in is natural, is what they can see, right? So they can't believe in a God. That they can't see. Yeah, it's everything is based on fact, right?
That's where the coherent breaks down, but they don't realize that the coherent is broken down.
Yeah. So you also have the pantheists who believe that all is God and God is all, right? So the chair is God. You are God.
Is this Hinduism?
No, pantheism. Pantheism.
Is Hinduism an example of pantheism? I thought it was, that they believe.
I don't know if I could say that.
And that's why the reincarnation thing, you
yeah, I don't know.
Keep coming back until you get it right.
I don't know if Hindus believe the chair is God.
Yeah.
Definitely believe that animals and, you know,
yeah.
Well, I know they believe that because of reincarnation, that especially when it comes to calves.
Things have spirits.
So cows are reincarnated people, right? So that's why they don't eat cows, there. So I don't know if they are, if it's the same thing, though. I'll check that out, right? So when you take all of them, you can really split them in two and categorize the ones who are, at least have a sense that there is a God. And those who believe that, no, we are God, there is no God, everything is nature, and so on and so on. But within that worldview, we're talking about, so now when we talk about origin, who are we, where we come from, and what makes us human? If you hold a theist point of view, you would say that, what?
We are created.
And the reason why we're human is that we were created particularly
in God's image.
In the image of God and in his likeness. Right? But if you're an atheist, you would say?
You came from a single cell organism.
You are primates, yeah? From a single cell. Accidentally. That's the other word that you can't forget. Not by design, but it's accidentally, not by design. Now, the question is, how do we evaluate those two? Those who say creation or for some Christian or non-Christian right now who believe that there is a God, but if they're teaching in academia, they don't want to talk about creation anymore. They talk about design, right? They talk about intelligent design, right? But for atheists says, no, there is no God. We are primates that evolved from single cell by accident. Now, how do we evaluate the two? What are some flaws, if you can find both in the creationist or atheism, naturalist?
One of them is that life has to begin somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't
yeah, talking about, well, there, we have two things. Not just, that's a good one. Yeah, no, that's a good one. The first thing is when somebody said evolution, you got to ask them, what evolution you talking about? Are you talking about
macro or
micro evolution? If it's microevolution, that is something we all can agree on. Because, yes, that's what I'm saying, because of adaptation. For instance, that's exactly what Darwin was doing, studying birds from different places and see how the same birds look differently from different regions. Some may have a longer beak. Some, if you look at dogs, you may find dogs in certain areas that have less hair. But if it's in a cold area, they may have more hair. So because of adaptation. So yes, we do believe in evolution in that way. That's microevolution. Because those, no matter where you go, those birds gonna remain?
Birds.
Birds. They will not change. Even with bacteria, when they take bacteria and go to a lab and do whatever they want to do with it, a bacteria remains?
Bacteria.
It doesn't change.
Turn into a dump
truck? Yeah. Yeah. So, but macroevolution say you change from one species to another. To another. That cannot happen. Well,
there's no
evidence of that ever happening. And again, is that when they're talking about the fossil record, there's so much gap into it that you can't really have a really good, you don't really have good data really to say this is true or not. It's just a theory.
So the evolutionists at one point in time tried to explain the gaps away by coming up with a new term. And I think, I don't know the exact term, but it was basically they were saying macroevolution is gap evolution or something like that, where or you would jump, everything would jump to a new species. And all of a sudden, you know, a dog would become a human.
Yeah, but, well, the problem is this. For you to accept that, you gotta have faith, right?
More faith than someone who's a Christian.
Yes. In fact, what's his name? Peter Furick. Furick. I don't know if he said the one who wrote, "I don't have enough faith to be an atheist." Yeah. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist.
Henry is in biology right now, and his curriculum is creationist.
Mm-hmm.
But it says in his book that the likelihood of just one of those cells of our DNA, you know how there's millions of them, just one of those forming by accident from this macroevolution, the likelihood of that was one followed by zeros filling a page. The stack of pages would go to the earth and to the moon and back seven times.
Yeah.
That's the likelihood of one of our DNA cells being formed the way it was by accident.
I heard it was similar to believing that a tornado could hit a junkyard and assemble a fully running Cadillac in perfect condition.
Accidentally, yeah.
Yeah, well, again, biologists today are talking about protein. And says protein is so complicated that even to construct a little bit of protein is just almost impossible, right? And they're talking about the DNA codes, right? That the language of DNA has to come from an intelligent designer. There's no way that it could happen that way. So when you look at origin, whether from the atheist point of view or the theist point of view, at least the theist has this written in a book, right? So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. At least, so that's what we're going to talk about a little bit tonight, right? Where do you go back Where did you get your where did you get your claim from, right? And could you observe it? Could you historically? Could you go scientifically, historically speaking, and go investigate and see if this is correct or not, right? So then it goes to the next point. The next point is meaning. Meaning. What is your life? If you came here, if you were created by accident, the question is there any meaning to your life? There can't be any, because meaning is not intrinsic. It's extrinsic. Worth is extrinsic. It's not intrinsic. Just like we did the example about the deer and the dog. The reason you could go out and hunt a deer is because it has no owner. In fact, the moment that the deer belonged to somebody, you can no longer hunt that deer, right? Because now it has worth. Not because of the deer, but because it belonged to somebody, right?
So you could create meaning in your own mind, but that doesn't mean that meaning has meaning. It's just your own perception.
Well, yeah, again, it has nothing to do with it, even with that, it has nothing to do with it. It's that, logically speaking, can it make sense? Right?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, can it make sense that you have meaning? Because it can't make sense in the worldview. That it's an accident. You're here. For what purpose? No purpose.
I mean, technically speaking, survival. If you got here by accident, then you got here by survival of the fittest. So your only purpose is to survive. Someone else not doing away with you.
Well, now if you listen to most naturalists, they tell you their only purpose is reproduction, right? To reproduce DNA, right? So it's to populate it, right? That's your only purpose in life. Is to populate, right? To keep DNA going, right? So that's your only purpose in life. But even that still doesn't make sense in the worldview. Because the only way you can have purpose is if you were designed to have purpose. Everything, and that is observable. That is testable. What is it that we've ever done, made on this earth, human being, that we did not make for a purpose? Give me one thing.
That humans made?
Made. That wasn't made for purpose.
Well, I mean, things have been made accidentally.
Hallmark movies.
And then they found a purpose for it. For instance, we talked about different discoverers who accidentally discovered something, and then they gave it purpose.
Then they give it, no, well, that's exactly, then they give purpose to it.
By accident.
Yeah.
Whether it came to be, if you didn't have no need for it, what usually happens? You trash it. Throw it away.
I have one thing that was made with no purpose.
Mm-hmm.
A Rube Goldberg machine.
A Rube?
Rube Goldberg.
What's that?
It's a meaningless machine.
What is it? All right, tell me.
It's like the thing you take a little ball bearing or something.
Mm-hmm.
Goes through all these different things, and then it knocks something down.
And then it kicks a bucket
down.
And knocks dominoes, and then it goes around, and then it causes the next thing, and the next
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, but it has a purpose. It's a purpose is for entertainment. And when God, when you, What does God? What does the Bible says? Why God created us?
To have a relationship with us.
Yes, but for His own pleasure.
Yes.
He found pleasure in creating us. We don't invent anything that we don't see a purpose in it for ourselves. An enjoyment from it for ourselves.
Or a benefit.
Benefit to us or society. So God created us for His own pleasure. That's what the Bible says, right? For His own pleasure. Yes. So everything that is created, everything that has purpose, must have a creator or an inventor. Otherwise, it has no purpose. We good? All right. So then we come to morality. Morality. Why do you need moral laws?
So that society can survive, stability.
Because if there's no meaning to you,
if people have no meaning and
what is the need for morality, for moral law? There's no need for a moral law. None whatsoever. Right? Because, and then now we talk about, the three types of society we talked about, right? Three types of society. Were you guys there when we talk about that? Three types. Heteronomous society, where a few at the top makes the laws, right? They tell you how to eat, when, what to wear, when to drive, how to drive, okay? So that's the heteronomous society. And then you have the autonomous society, where the person says, that's a word that is very popular among teenagers, not just teenagers, but teenagers and young people, it's my truth. It's my truth, right? So everything is relative, right? In fact, even the concept of abortion, when we say it's a woman's right to choose, is looking in the autonomous culture, right? It's my right to choose. It's not about whether something is true or not, whether it's right or wrong, but it's about my right to choose, not anyone else, right? Not the baby in the womb.
Not the father, nothing.
It's my right to choose. However, the counter argument to this is if you bring the father in. In fact, that would be discrimination. Because there's nothing that a father can do to carry a child. Now, that means somebody else hold my desire to have a child in their hands. I lose my right.
And the baby loses its right because someone else holds its life and death in their hands.
Yes. So then,
you've heard the testimony of that girl who survived an abortion. She's stood up and given her testimony multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
It's very impactful if you haven't ever seen it. It's incredible. I think so. She has scarring on her body from all the acid she was burned with in the womb, but she survived. And she talks about the fact that, where was her right to live?
That happened. Not that, again, I want to make this clear. Living in the society that we live in, by the laws that we live in, it doesn't take away how that person was feeling at that time, right? The compassion that you need to have for somebody at that time who was facing with this issue that Now that society says, go ahead, you could do whatever you want. It's your body. And being able to grow up in that type of sense of mentality and fighting with both, you know, with both sides. What I caution Christian is how they talk about abortion in church, because I can't remember I think I said at the beginning, but now it's totally out of my head. I think 1 every 5 women in church have had an abortion. Right? So you have to be very careful when you're talking about that as well, and talking about the redemption of God. For anyone who's done anything in life that is contrary to what God wants them to do. Yeah, so therefore there's no need for morality, because there's no meaning to life in that sense, right? Because life was originated by accident. So the last one is theonomous culture, where the law is the law of God, or someone who is higher than us. Because if you live in the in an autonomous culture where Mike's have his truth and I have my truth, the problem with that is no two people agrees on everything on earth. And the moment I disagree with Angie, I switch to a heteronomous culture telling her how to believe. So I just took her autonomy away. So autonomous culture can't really ever work.
Right. Because no two people are ever going to be honest.
No two people will ever agree on everything. So the other thing is, as we said, all men are created equal. The only culture that all men can truly be created equal is under a theonomous culture. In fact, I think the forefathers of this country were so wise to put a separation between church and state. Because even though we believe in a theonomous culture, but the moment that you enforce everything on everybody, you kind of change it from a theonomous culture to a heteronomous culture. Do you get what I'm saying?
They gave people the right to not believe the truth.
It has to be self-evident.
But you think about it, when they did come over, I'm thinking like Pilgrim, they were heteronomous because they were setting the law and they were judging people. Mm-hmm. Like Roger Williams had to go away because he wasn't quite exactly what they wanted. So it just went that way.
Does it work? It doesn't work. It's going to break down some way, somehow, eventually.
They were the ones persecuted over to the Dutch. Then they came here finally, and then they went and persecuted others for not.
It was to show you the way of God.
Yeah. So even in the Bible, when God set out laws, He gave us the choice and tell us, this is the consequences, this is the benefit. You choose. And somebody said, well, God knew we were going to sin, then why did He create us? Yeah, it's because God didn't want us to be in a heteronomous culture. No autonomous culture. That the theonomous culture is based on, first of all, on the love of God, right? Because if you love somebody, you can't control everything they do, right? A guy, you fell in love with a guy, and he was good-looking guy, great guy, sweep you off your feet, or a woman, whether a guy or a girl, and then all of a sudden, she's like, let me see your phone. Who are you calling? What are you doing? Where did you go? I don't want you to wear that dress. That dress is a little too short, too sexy. No, don't put makeup. No, put makeup for me. This is how you should. And all of a sudden, this guy you fell in love with now becoming to look like a monster to you. And if God were to treat us that way, then God would become a monster to us. So because of his love, he has to give us the freedom of choice. Not that there are no consequences to it and benefits to it. But if God were to rule every single move that we make, then God would not be a loving God to us. He will be a monstrous God in our mind. So the only law that can work on earth is a theonomous culture, is in a theonomous culture. Heteronomous culture can't work. Has not worked, somebody will suffer. Somebody will suffer. Because if you look at it, what country they just decided to let women,
Saudi Arabia,
to allow women to drive? And did the woman... Did the woman say, well, nah, we're not going to drive? Nah, we were never interested in driving. Of course they were interested. They have the desire, you know?
Insurance rates skyrocketed.
Huh?
Insurance rates skyrocketed.
Insurance is higher for men than women.
So the moment, even with that certain countries as well, where the woman cannot go to school. They don't want women to be educated. I don't think if you gave women the freedom that they would say, no, we don't want to be educated, right? So somebody will suffer in any heteronomous culture, right? No one will be, all men will not be equal in that culture.
How do you turn off a human's natural instinct to want to learn? At 1 year old, they'll say, why? What's that? It's in us to want to learn everything. Why? How can any culture say it's not okay for you to be educated?
In fact, that's Buddhism, right? Buddhism all is the entire view is to extinguish desire. Actually, Ravi was talking about a woman who graduated and became a monk, the first time a woman became a monk, and he had a chance to interview her, and he asked her, do you have children? And she says, yes. And he says, but you can't live with them. She says, no. And he said to her, you're never going to see them? And she says, well, I have a car. You know, I try to meet with one of them almost every day. For now, until I lose the desire for that and whatsoever. So what Ravi asked her was, so how do you say the Dalai Lama? Is that how they call it?
Dalai Lama, right?
The Dalai Lama desire for Tibet to become a free country. But yet he's the head of Buddhism. So Ravi asked him, why is that his desire? So he can have desire. Why is it okay for him to desire for Tibet to be free when the whole purpose of Buddhism is to extinguish desire? She says, well, we don't ask questions about that. And then she started crying. Right? Those things never work. They just can't work. Some way, somehow, the worldview will collapse. It won't be coherent. Right? And we have the last one that we talked about. We talked about destiny. The reason why people will follow a moral law, it's because they believe in destiny, right? Because otherwise, what's the difference to live like Hitler or Mother Teresa? There's no difference whatsoever. If there is not an ultimate judgment, there is no reason to live like Mother Teresa. You could do as you please and do whatever you want, and there will be no judgment, nothing whatsoever. You could live a great life and help people and all these things. There is no reward at the end. So why follow morality if there is no destiny? If you don't believe in destiny, then morality is obsolete. And if morality is obsolete, then life has no meaning. You could do whatever you want to anybody at any time, wherever you want to go. And if life has no meaning because life happened by accident. In theory, this would work, the worldview. But when you start talking to the people who believe in it themselves, the theory starts crumbling. How do you know a claim is true? What makes a claim true? So we've been talking about atheism, and we've been talking about theism. Of course, we all are Christian here. Somebody would walk in here and says, no, you're biased. Because I could take an atheist and make them do a study, just like I'm doing for seven weeks, with people who believe in atheism, and they would put forward in great light all of their points for that would highlight atheism, why it's the right worldview. Then the question is, how do you know something is true or not? How? Just because the Bible claimed that it is, does that make it so? Again, is it because you're a Christian? That's good if you say yes. Then now you're going to have to prove it. Why? What you said? What do you say? What do you say, Joe? Because they what?
Master.
The master created it. So you're taking it by faith. Right? By faith. Because remember what we were talking about last week? We're talking about, just because the atheists believe there is no destiny, and we believe there is destiny. And the reason why they say there is no destiny is because they said no one has ever come back from the other side of the curtain. We've never interviewed anyone who said, yes, I died and I came back, and there is a destiny, there is something after life. And the Christian says, yes, there is. So what the first thing we said in our study was, both of them have to believe this by faith. So the atheists have a big problem there, because they said everything they believe in is based on fact. The absence of proof is not proof of absence. Just because you don't have proof doesn't mean it's not true. There is life after death. So both the theist, the Christian, or the non-Christian, have to believe in destiny, life after death, by faith, whatever camp you're on. I don't believe it, I believe it. Both of us would have to believe it by faith. Do you agree? Mm-hmm. Then therefore, it doesn't give the atheist any moral or superior knowledge on the Christian. Nor at this point, too, does it give the Christian any moral or superior knowledge on the atheist, right? So what would have to happen?
There would have to be some proof of it happening.
Yes, there would have to be some proof of it happening. In fact, let me go back a little bit. But what the atheist doesn't have that the theists have is that we said there was someone There was someone who proclaimed that they did. Came back from the other side of the curtain. His name is Jesus Christ. All of a sudden, the theist side is based on fact. Whether you believe it or not, the moment they make a claim that there is someone, you may agree or disagree until they prove it. The moment the theist is saying that there was someone who came back from the other side of the curtain, and he even made a claim and says, in my Father's house there are many mansions. If it wasn't so, I would not have told you. I'm going to prepare a place for you. Right? So at this point, the atheist is still believing theirs by faith. And Christian now believe theirs on fact. There still remain for us to prove whether it's true or not. But they are still believing by faith, and now we're believing on fact. Do you see the difference?
Yeah, and there can't possibly be someone to come back from the dead. There can't, because they believe that there is nothing, there would never be anybody to come back from that, because there's nothing.
Well, the only thing they can do is disagree with the Christian. But on what ground? Because the Christian says, mine is not by faith. Mine is on fact. Yes. Yes. That's exactly. Well, those are some of the things that we're going to talk about tonight. Right? So theirs are based on fact. Now, there are only two ways. There are only two ways you could prove something scientifically. That's what we talked about last week, right? There are only two ways you can prove something. There are only two science where you can prove something to be true. Observational science. Yeah, that's observable science, right? And what's the other one? Historical science. There are only two ways you could prove whether the Christian is right or wrong. It's observable science or historical science. What is observable science?
Something you can see happen right now and make it happen again.
Something you can test. Something you can observe. Something you can test. Something you can observe.
And repeat.
And you can replicate. You can repeat. Right? Something you can test. You can observe. And you can replicate. Right? The only thing the Christian have now is the fact that, let me take a step back. If we start with the atheists, they have no observable science to say that there's no destiny. And they have no historical science. They can't prove it with observable science. They can't prove it with historical science. So they still, everything they believe is still by faith. Now, when I talk about faith, I'm not talking about the type of faith we talk about. We talk about dead faith, right? Because faith must be substantiated, right? So it's dead faith. We're talking about living faith, right? But the Christian can. First, they have to use historical science. Because Jesus is not going to die every day and come back again. That's observable science. because he died once and for all. That's what the Bible says. So you can't use that for observable. You can't use that the scientific test to prove destiny by observable science for us now. So what do we have to use? The same thing any forensic scientist would use. After a crime happened, they can't repeat the crime again. It's the evidence that will demand what? A verdict. They walk in the house, and they're like, oh, they're at the crime scene. They're like, I see two glasses. One have lipstick, one don't. It must have been one woman or a man. Or in our time now, a transvestite. Right? It could be anything, right? But.
Careful. Another website.
Well, it could be. I'm just talking the truth.
Orly.
Right?
Don't wear lipstick.
Oh, well, yeah.
It was Nana.
Yeah.
She did it.
But the first thing you will, right? Until you start getting all your facts, right? But the first thing you would observe is that, okay, why is there a lipstick here, right? But one proof would not be enough, right? You would have to look for different things. So therefore, you can't. So just like a forensic scientist, you cannot solve this by observable science. It's going to have to be historical science. It's on what happened. Can you prove it? Do you have eyewitnesses? What do they say about eyewitnesses in court? Yeah, well, once you have an eyewitness, right, everything else means nothing.
I mean, a reputable eyewitness.
Yes. Well, now that's the question. Now you're going to, trust me, you could even have a fingerprint or what have you. When you have an eyewitness who saw it, it means more than anything else. Now the question is the eyewitness reliable or not? Now, it's not just written in a book. There were hundreds of disciples who said they saw Jesus with their own two eyes. And not at the moment they make that claim there, they were able to do what? To use observable science. Observable science. To see it themselves. To observe it themselves. But us who are looking at it from far cannot use observable science. We have to use historical science. Now the question is, okay, yes, they did see it. Now, are these guys reliable or not? So what are the reliability of these guys? Jesus, these guys left everything they had. Their father's business. Some left their wives, Peter. Many of them leave everything they have to follow this Jesus. They believed in him. They saw him do miracles. They believed in everything he said. And then before he died, three times he told them that, I'm going to die and I'm going to do what? Resurrected. And everything he told him, I'm going to get arrested, I'm going to get crucified, and then on the third day, I'm going to rise again. Did he get arrested? What he said was true. Check. Was he crucified? Check. But on the third day, how many people were there who went to witness? How many of them show up to see that miracle? Zero. Why? Because like the atheists, they didn't believe it until they what?
Saw it with their own.
Observe it. No one showed up. And I like when Andy Stanley said, no one showed up because nobody was expecting nobody. Right? I love it, right? He says they didn't show up because nobody was expecting nobody. In fact, there were two women who went. But they didn't go to observe that. They didn't go to see that. In fact, they went to keep him dead. They went with spices to what? To embalm the body. Because they believed that
dead people stay dead.
Dead Why all of a sudden now they changed their mind? And they thought that it was right to document that. And even lose their life for it. Because they saw it, their own two eyes. Somebody will live for a lie, but they're not going to die for a lie. Nobody dies for a lie. Somebody may die for truth, but nobody dies for a lie. If these guys were able to leave everything, and after Jesus died and left, they continue to travel the world to preach this gospel when they know that he did not rise. They accept to lose their life. Peter got crucified upside down because he says, I'm not worthy to be crucified like my Savior was. Crucify me upside down. For what reason? In fact, the books that we have right now, they didn't write them to publish them. They were personal letters. They were writing for what? What did Luke tell us? Everyone have undertaken to make an account of the things that we were taught by those who were eyewitnesses. But most excellent Theophilus, I myself see that it is right that I also write in an orderly account. Why? So that you may know the certainty of the things that you were taught. So that you may know the certainty of what you were taught. Because again, if you see the first book, Luke and Acts, there are two volumes. If you see Luke, he calls him most excellent Theophilus. So we're assuming that this guy was a guy of great stature who became a believer of Jesus. But he's like, in order for me to put my life on the line for this, I better have proof. And when he wrote it to him, he says, most excellent Theophilus. On the second book, they have already acquainted. They become family, brothers and sisters in the Lord. Now he says, Theophilus. Because now he believes, right? So then that's what we're talking about tonight. So tonight we're talking about how do you know that something is true, a claim is true, when you make a claim or when you believe on something, is there a test to know that something is true or not? Yes, there is. There are three tests to every claim. To know that whether something is true or not. And that's when I wish I had my notes. But I'll do my best tonight. There are only three types of signs. There are three tests to truth. Logical consistency. Second one, empirical adequacy. And experiential relevance. Those are the three tests. Experiential relevance. So let me give the definitions a little bit and then we'll could delve into them, right? So logical consistency asks, when you talk about logical consistency, there can be no contradiction in the belief, in the worldview. For instance, you see all the times when people look at the Bible or the New Testament, trying to decide whether Jesus truly died and rise again, they're looking to see if there is consistency between the books. In fact, even the mistakes what seems to be mistakes in the New Testament about the resurrection of Jesus tell you that it shows you the logical consistency, the proof of it, right? I don't have the notes here, but I, right? You see, in some instance, in the book of Luke or Mark or Matthew, somebody says, then we saw two angels. And another one might say, we saw one angel. Right? I saw one angel, something like this. I'm not sure because, again, as I told you, I don't have my notes right now, right? What is important in this is that they both saw angels. Or between what they said, the angel says this, or the other one says it differently. In fact, if it's something that they were corroborating to tell a lie, they would all come together and say, let's say it the same way.
Isn't that true in a court of law? They also look for there to be just the teensiest, slight bit of variance.
Well, definitely, because if it's word for word,
story, if it's exactly the same, they automatically think.
If everybody who comes to you said word for word, that says all these people were in cahoots. They come together to say exactly the same thing, to fix each other's story so that they could tell the same story. But when you look at the books, the Gospels, they tell the story, but you could see little variation from each and every one of them. But as I told you before, first of all, they weren't writing those letters to publicize. They were writing it to a church, to a friend. Right? And when they tell the story, it's almost the same thing. So today there was the impeachment inquiry. If you pick up the New York Times, you pick up the Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, they each will be telling the same story. But there might be slight, right, when you wake up to variation to it, this when you wake up this in the morning. It doesn't mean that it did not happen.
And some things will be the same, like this.
Oh, the bigger picture will be the same. A lot of things will be the same, but you'll find variation. Why? Because they weren't coming together and say, let's write the same story, right? Logical consistency. It has to have, there has, it's, when you're looking for a claim, you're looking to see if it's true or not. For it to be true, it has, for it to be logically consistent, it has to be like a jigsaw puzzle. It has to be able to connect with one another. It has to fit well. You can't force it to fit. You know, you play those board game, all the, those board puzzles before, right? There are sometimes that I remember after working on them for so long, and you reach to a point as a kid, you just, if it, it looks like it should be there, but it, you, but you know it should not be there. So you're like, you're pushing it, you're forcing it to fit, but it does not fit. So in order for it to be logically consistent, it has to fit, right? It has to fit. What you have to remember when you're doing the logical consistency test, you're not looking to prove whether it's right or wrong. You're looking to see, does it make sense? Logically. Does it make sense? Right? For instance, if somebody says, Dave is never wrong. Period. Dave is never wrong. Period. Dave said 2 + 2 = 5. Right? 3 statements I'm going to give you. Dave is never wrong. Period. Dave says 2 + 2 = 5. Period. 2 + 2 = 5 is wrong. It's not logical. It does not make sense. If this is always right, then 2 plus 2 have to be equals 5. If 2 plus 2 does not, and if you say 2 plus 2 does not equals 5, you just prove that Dave is not always right. 2 plus 2. Right? Do you get it, right? So what they're saying is has to make sense. Right? You can't say, well, all men have brown hair. I don't have brown hair. I am a man. Logically, it does not make sense. If all men has brown hair, I don't have brown hair, I am a man, something is wrong logically with that sequence. So first of all, when someone make a claim, has to be logically consistent. Secondly, has to be empirically adequate, right? Does it have can we observe it? Would it be admissible in court? Okay. Empirical adequacy means we have to be able to observe it. For instance, if I came to you and say, guys, your pastor just bought a Lamborghini and I drove it to Bible study tonight.
And people like, go show us.
Right? You want to see it. Right? And if you come outside and you don't see it, then I'm lying. The claim is not a truth claim. First of all, before you even go outside, you can make a logical logical test. Logical consistency. This is as far as we know, this is the pastor's finance. Right?
This is how much a Lamborghini costs.
How many kids he has.
Or you can say again, if you even have that's inobservable science. That's the next one. But then even with that, you can say logically that doesn't make sense, right? This doesn't fit, right? With his lifestyle, and again, especially with my belief of giving to people, there's no way I will ever own a Lamborghini. I can't ever walk in. I don't care how much money I have. I don't think I would ever walk into a dealership and buy a Lamborghini. It's not going to happen.
That's because they won't negotiate. That's why you won't.
If they give it for free, I'll take it. But
they'll sell it and build homes for others.
But in my head, the moment they say the Lamborghini, like I'm already thinking. You know how many people you could feed with that? That's what comes to me automatically. That's how I'm made. That's how I was made. So that would logically it would not make sense for me to come in, for you to come in here that I have that. Now, you would have to go outside and see if this empirically adequate. The only way you could do that now is to go in outside to check it.
Out. Last year I had a Lamborghini. Now we can't go back in time to check it out.
Well,
still do all that
historical science. Okay. Now it's not observable, right? Now it's historical science, right? You have to go back and with the trail. It has to be able to verify it.
Okay. Verifiable.
Yeah, it has to be verifiable.
Or verifiable.
Right? Yes. It has to be observable or verifiable.
I just want you to know that I actually own a Bugatti Veyron, which is the most expensive car on the planet.
Oh.
Is it a Matchbox version?
Well, it's actually both.
That's what I was going to ask you. Can you get in it? All right? Can you get in it? All right? And lastly, is experiential relevance. Does it work in real life? Does it work in real life? Does it affect my life? Any truth claim will affect your life. For instance, back in the days, people used to drive junk. People used to drive junk. Well, without any consequences. Without consequences. Oh, he was drunk. Well, you know, he didn't do it on purpose. Or she didn't do it on purpose. I don't know. They might make you feel fine. I don't know what it is, but you go home. Even your license at those times, you know. But now they make it law. Now it's a truth. The moment that they make it a law, it's the truth. It's going to affect your life. And whether you do it or not, whether you ever drop an ounce of alcohol in your mouth, it still affects you. Does it make, is it relevant to you in real life? Does it affect your life? So now let's go back to the worldviews to check them out. If we look at the atheist worldview, that your origin is by accident, yet, not all atheists believe you have life has no meaning. Not all atheists. Some, the most radical ones, because they don't want to lose the conversation, right? They don't want to lose the conversation. They will tell you, yeah, life has no meaning. They will accept that fact. Because they know, they're smart people, they know that the moment that they believe life has meaning, then life must have an originator. So they will say, no, life has no meaning. But not all atheists. Majority of atheists will tell you, yeah, life has meaning. But logically, that does not make sense. And not only that does not make sense, but if you ask anyone on earth, are you perfect? Have you ever asked somebody, are you perfect? What would they say?
No.
No. Not one person on earth, unless they're a little deranged. Well, we knew that a long time ago, Dave. Deranged, yeah. Unless they're a little deranged, right? That person will tell you, I'm not perfect. And the moment you say that you're not perfect, you're saying that you've done
something to live up to.
Yeah. Or you've done some wrong. But if life has, again, if life has no meaning, there's no need for morality. But now, how can immoral people, because remember we talked about that when we talk about morality. You don't have to believe in God to live morally. But you need God in order to have morality. Outside of God, then you're only left with two, heteronomous and autonomous, which does not work. So logically speaking, and there's no destiny. If there's no destiny, then why do I need to be moral? So the two big part that doesn't work in the atheist worldview is morality and meaning. The other ones you could have debate about. But because we're talking about something actual, like we're living right now, meaning and morality. So is it empirically adequate for human being to live on this earth without morality, without absolute morality?
No, we'd all just kill each other. Take each other's stuff.
You take any country, and we've seen it over and over again. Take any country that is not living under absolute morality. Who lives in heteronomous culture or autonomous culture? More crime has been committed.
But it can't be called a crime if it's autonomous.
Well, yeah, but I'm just...
saying by calling it a crime, you're saying there's something wrong with it. And if there's something wrong with it, you've just put your moral value...
Exactly. But what I'm saying, but for me, from my point of view, what I'm saying is that if you look at most of the countries that create that cause more harm to humanity, they were almost always did not believe in God. They were almost always believed the emperor was God. That one man controlled everything, or a group of men controlled everything. And they had no one to answer to. In fact, I did a Bible study. My first Bible study I did here at this church was, is there a God? And if there's a God, what kind of God is it? And the first thing you saw what was happening in the 60s in the United States, the Time magazine had in front of it, God is dead. Yeah, Time magazine. God is dead. Right? God is dead. That's Nietzsche, by the way. Yes. Nietzsche wrote that God is dead. And he said, we killed him. Right? God is dead, we killed him. And you have to understand that. Because if God is dead, we have no one to answer to. Then we could live our lives however we want. Because the moment you put God in the picture, you cannot live however you want.
We like to use Hitler as an example because pretty much no matter who you are, whether you think you're an atheist or not, you agree Hitler was that guy. He was an immoral king. But he did not necessarily think he was God. He still actually believed in God, didn't he? But he thought... He thought he was...
He was living... He was living in a heteronomous culture.
Yes. He was the head of that.
Yes.
But he didn't claim to be an atheist. He thought he was doing God's will.
Well, I don't think he thought he was doing God's will. He might have used God's name. Right? Because he was killing. By the way, that's one of the things that I always said. The church had a lot to do with the rise of Hitler. Because the church began to accept lies. Little by little, he lies. And the monster become bigger. Because the church, not just the church, but the church was a part of it, right? Is that, remember they were coming from a time where they were bankrupt. Yeah, they were bankrupt. And then, in fact, the world made them pay through retribution to fix all these other countries they destroyed. So they were bankrupt in the country. Everybody was hungry. The country was bad. And then he came to give them hope. Right? And they clung to that hope. And then he start muting everybody one by one. Everybody would believe in him. The moment you stand in opposition against him, But by the time somebody stood up, it was too late. And the church played a big role in that. So that's the reason why, you know, again, truth has to always be true. It doesn't matter if my wife does it or my son does it. If it's true, I will say you're wrong. And that doesn't mean I'm against you. I may still like you. If Dave does something wrong, Mike does something wrong, Joe does something wrong, I have to have the courage to say you're wrong. Because the moment you begin to accept untruth, when it's clearly what it is, then you went a slippery slope. In fact, most of churches where pastors fall, it's because of that. The emperor was too much of a giant to tell him he's wrong. He sets himself that way. In fact, if you go to a church like this, it starts little by little. In little things, you might say, oh, how about we do this something? No, I said you do it this way, and that's the way it's done. You may be shocked at first, but the next time, you know not to better, you better not cross him again. And then you seeing things happening before you, you still, and it's wrong, but you keep your mouth shut, it should not happen. You should not cross that person. Right? And what's going to happen a lot of time too, a lot of people who are not living right before God, sometimes they let the authority get away with murder. Right? I was dealing with that with a church in Atlanta where they called me in to help. And half of the people were saying, and the pastor's committed adultery. In fact, he impregnated a woman, the wife of another man in the church. Right? And half of the church was saying, well, he's human, just like us. He did not want to step down. He did not even want to take a 3-month sabbatical. Right? So when you walk into this place, you're like, what? The Bible was totally clear that the overseer must be above reproach. She must be above reproach. In fact, if I do something that bad because you love me and you like me, you get on my side and say, oh, no, he's not going anywhere. You're doing me a disservice. I don't know if you know that. Destroy the body and save the soul. I may not be happy. I may, whatever. But I would rather you destroy the body and save the soul. Right? So yeah, it's very important. So, my computer, I let it die. Yeah, so it's very important that we do that. So where was I? Oh, I'll say empirical adequacy, right? So it has to be verifiable, observable, right? You have to be able to verify, is this true? You have to be able to observe, is this true, right? And then you got to talk about relevance. When you experience it, you see, a lot of Christians, when they ask him, how do you know God is true? God is real. God exists. Right? Most common Christian says, because I feel him. I know him. Right? And majority of the time you find people reject that. No. Thank you. That's part of something being true. It has to affect your life. Because you can't tell me the moment that you became a Christian, if you truly did believe in God, accept God, it totally changed your view. It totally changed who you are. And when you do something wrong, it bothers you. It bothers you. Something that didn't bother you before, it bothers you now. You know, I say this all the time. When I was 14, 15 years old, I already had in my mind I'm going to chase the girl's skirts. That's the idea that I had in my mind. Because perhaps wherever I lived or what have you, I don't know if it was that, that in order for you to be macho man, you had to have many women. I don't know where that worldview came from. But in my mind, I knew it was there. But the moment I became a Christian, at 16 years old, that totally changed. It totally changed.
We're very glad.
Huh?
We're very glad.
We're very glad. Yeah. Right? It told you because I just knew. And then, in fact, I've been pitching on Joseph. That is exactly what I read. I can't do this to my God. I'm like, what? What? I'm telling you, it was a nighttime, probably 2, 3 a.m. I'm reading this as a 16-year-old. And it blew my mind. What do you mean? Whoa, this is crazy. Right? And it totally changed your mind. It affects everything that you do. It affects who you are in Christ. So the test of truth is that it has to make sense logically. Logical consistency. That we are God's creation. And the reason why We are who you are as human being. It's because we're created in God's image and His likeness. And He gave us dominion on every single thing on this earth. Because of that, life has meaning. And because life has meaning, not because of us, but because of God, then God set laws. To protect life on earth. Not just written laws, but even in our conscience. That's the reason why somebody could be an atheist and still have a conscience. Because God says, I've written my word, my law, in their hearts. And then more so about destiny, because we know that there is life after death. Therefore, we uphold the law of God. Logically, that makes sense. And it's verifiable. For instance, if somebody says they're an atheist, they don't believe in morality, because there are some who also say they don't believe in moral law. By a moral law giver. But then if you were to do something to their family, they want retribution. So
yes, and they absolutely feel justified in getting retribution.
Exactly, but it's not then at this point. Experientially, it's not relevant. Their worldview is not relevant to them. Experientially, it's not relevant. Because if there is life that has no meaning, therefore morality should be obsolete, then why do you want justice in your life? You should not, it should be like, oh well, let's move on. It was good while it lasted. So it has to be logically consistent. It has to be empirically adequate, and it has to be experiential relevance.
What would you say to an atheist or an agnostic who says they do believe in life after death, but it's not necessarily heaven and hell, but that there is something beyond the grave? They just don't call it what we call it. Because there's plenty of people out there who don't really want to believe in God, and they don't want to follow necessarily God, our God's moral laws, but yet
a true atheist would
mom dies, they're like, oh, she's gone on to a better place.
Yeah, a true atheist will
what?
A true atheist will never adhere to that. Yeah, well, but I tell you, an agnostic is more so borderline in the theist side, right? Because they're not saying that there's no God.
They're just saying they really don't know.
They're not saying, they say God is too complicated for them to even comprehend that, so they leave it alone, right? So an agnostic is kind of, you push them more into the theist. Oh, yeah. There's a guy I love to listen to, David Belinsky. Great mind. He lives in France now. He's an American. He's teaching in France. This guy is, but he will argue all the time against the atheists. But yet he doesn't really believe in God. He says an agnostic. He believes there is something, but he's not going there. No, majority of people in America are theists.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, of the ones we would be willing to convert.
Yes.
We're more likely to come across an agnostic. You have at least atheist.
You have at least a good close to 70% of Americans claim to be theists. Right? At least a good 70%. Yeah. So that's where we are. That's where it's not just about believing something or make a claim. Because the other thing is that you hear people ask you, "What time is it, Mike?" Oh, 8:30 something.
Really?
Okay, so we, whoa, okay. Let me say this last. And then we'll close. Somebody will tell you, for instance, oh, by the way, I don't know if I told you guys, I started a conversation with my neighbor.
Oh.
Remember that neighbor I was telling you about? I saw him, we were at the bus stop, and I said, "Hey, Eric." I said, "Listen, man, about a year or two ago we were talking, and you said you didn't believe in God. You know, I mean, this is my life. But yet you tell me you don't believe in God. I'd like to sit down to talk more." He says, "I'd like that." He says, "Lately I've been asking myself questions. Am I missing something?"
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, "Well, you know."
I said, "Now that I've done my Bible study."
So then I said, "Yeah." He's
primed and ready.
I said, "Yeah, let's do a bonfire behind your yard because you have a nice little..." Then I said, let's sit down and talk. So we're looking to set a time to start talking. But one of the things he said is that I'm beginning to think that there is something beyond us. But what I can't accept is that there is one who is in charge of everything. That's what I can't accept. I can't accept that yet, to believe that there is one God. And when there's all these religions, how can you just say there's one God? I knew the answer, but I didn't tell him the answer. I said, "Well, let's talk." Because truth, by definition, is exclusive. Truth, by definition, is exclusive. The moment you say something is true, you exclude everything else. The only time people want truth to be inclusive is when it comes to Christianity or to God. Truth, by definition, is exclusive. The moment you make a truth claim, you exclude everything else.
Can you give an example?
Example.
This jewel box is red.
That could be.
It's red.
That could be. But before I answer that, Jesus says, in fact, when people say, why do Christians make Christianity exclusive? We didn't. Jesus did. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Truth, by definition, is exclusive. He made a very simple observation. This is a black chair. Is that true or not? In your mind.
That's not red. That's orange red.
But then,
crimson.
But then that doesn't say anything about the chair. It says about you.
The toolbox is crimson.
I can accept that. But then it's only crimson.
The chair. In fact, by the way, what's crimson?
Red.
It's a shade of
red. Okay. Yeah, it's red. but I'm saying the chair is black. But what I'm saying is the moment I say the chair is black, I exclude every other color.
Yes. Okay.
Whether it's true or not, that's the other question. But the moment I make a claim, I exclude everything else.
So what happens if we want to claim that something is more than one thing? We want to claim that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life.
Mm-hmm.
So, why can't we say the toolbox is red and yellow? We haven't excluded, right?
whether you make a truth claim, whether it's two, three, four things you said, every time you say something, you're excluding. You say he's the way, not a way.
Right.
He's the truth, not a truth. He's the light, not a light. And the worst part, no one come to the Father but through me. That means not through. You can't come through Allah. You can't come through Buddha. You can't come through Finchisiris. The way. So truth by definition is exclusive. If you say you're an American, what are you saying? You're saying you're not any other thing but an American. You exclude every other nationality there that you can be. You get that?
Yeah. Right, but that's what an American is. When you're an American, you're an American. It doesn't mean you're not partially Australian or Irish. It just means you actually right now are.
No, but get what I'm saying. It doesn't even have, it could be true just for you. But what I'm saying to you, and it may not be true, but the moment you make a claim, let's not even talking about verifying it. The moment you make a claim, you're excluding everything else. Because truth by definition is exclusive. You can't, what do you mean?
They like to say that your truth is just your opinion. Like, you could say, you know, the tree's green. That's your opinion.
Yeah, so that means now, the moment that this person say this now, where do I know they fall in the worldview?
Autonomous.
Autonomous, yeah.
Right? Right? So wait, when you say that's my opinion, then I ask you, what do you mean by that? If I ask you, what do you mean by that?
Well, what's your fact? You have to give me a fact.
Now you just, by asking me that question, you become a heteronomous. Now you're imposing something on me. Why don't you accept me for me? The moment you want to change what I said, you no longer give me the liberty. Because the moment, that's the problem with autonomous culture.
Right.
Because the moment that I hold my right, you disagree with me, all of a sudden you want to be heteronomous on me when you're fighting for autonomy. So if you're going to want to hold this right to be autonomous, you have to give me that right too. And if you don't,
autonomy,
you have to get that right. And the moment you do that, the moment you go against what I said, you're in a heteronomous culture, dictate to me what I should believe or not because you don't believe it. So you just tell me that you don't believe in what you say you believe in. Because if it's an autonomous culture, my right is my right. You should not even question it. That's why it cannot work. Experiential relevance. It doesn't hold relevance to us because the moment it happens, it kills it right there.